in the midst of a poaching crisis and an illegal trade crisis, particularly with regard to the African elephant, where we're losing between 20 and 35,000 elephants per year to poaching to supply the illegal trade in ivory. And last July, President Obama signed an executive order on combating wildlife trafficking that called on government agencies to develop a national strategy to address wildlife poaching and illegal trade.
And so it seems like you have responded with this pretty strong ban. In the few months that it has been in existence, has it made a difference?
Well, we're in the middle of taking a series of administrative actions that, when all is said and done, will impose a near complete ban on elephant ivory trade. And so it's a little bit too early to say that what the difference is at this point, because we've taken a couple of actions to strengthen our controls, but there are a couple of actions that we're still in the process of developing. But one thing I would say is that we have seen a dramatic increase in public awareness about elephant poaching, about illegal ivory trade, and about the threat posed by consumers buying ivory that may have come from elephants that were recently killed.
And tell us, how are you measuring that? For example, how do you know that you're getting across to people that they need to be more careful about what they buy?
Well, we'll certainly be able to measure it by measuring public awareness of ivory trade and where that ivory comes from. There have also been market surveys that have been done in the past, particularly by conservation organizations, looking at the amount of ivory that's available in the U.S. market. And so we should be able to measure the impact in part by measuring the availability of ivory after all of these actions have been taken.
I guess maybe the ultimate measure is what is happening with the elephants themselves as you go further back into the food chain, so to speak, here. And so what about the poachers and the nations in which they operate? Are we getting cooperation from them?
I think we are. And in fact, there are really two reasons that we announced the actions that we're taking. One is certainly to ensure that we're not contributing to the problem as a consumer of illegally acquired elephant ivory. But the other is that it positions the United States to push other countries to do more. And we are, in fact, seeing a number of countries, both elephant range states, as well as other significant consumers like China and Hong Kong and Vietnam, taking additional actions to strengthen controls over their own marketplaces and also to protect elephants in the wild. And, of course, the U.S. actions to control illegal ivory trade are just a small part of what the United States is doing overall to address this problem, including by helping other countries to address their problems.
And Ed, I want to bring you in to talk about some of the things that the U.S. is doing here, because you are in the law enforcement branch. You've already had several arrests under this since the new crackdown was announced. Tell me a little bit about the characteristics of those types of cases and if you're seeing any patterns.
Yeah, the patterns that we're seeing now in law enforcement is the illegal wildlife trafficking or illegal trade in wildlife it's changed over the last 10 or 15 years. 10 or 15 years ago, it used to be a crime of opportunity. You used to see individuals going out and maybe shooting an overlimit of ducks, or an individual going out west and illegally poaching a grizzly bear or elk. And what we see now over the last 10 or 15 years, we've seen organized crime groups get into wildlife trafficking. And the reason they're getting into wildlife trafficking is because it's a high-profit, low-risk crime. We've had individuals like the Russian mob or Eastern European organized crime get into the caviar trade here in the United States. We have Irish organized crime involved in the rhino horn trade here in the United States. We have Vietnamese and Chinese organized crime involved in the rhino and illegal elephant trade. And the reason being is rhino horn here in the United States sells for approximately $30,000 a pound here in the United States. By the time that rhino horn gets to Asia, its final destination, that horn could be worth $500,000.
Wow. So let me just make sure I have that. $30,000 a ton?
$30,000 a pound.
$30,000 a pound, and astronomically more by the time it becomes a final product somewhere else.
Correct. And that's worth more than cocaine, heroin, or gold here in the United States.
Yeah, that's twice the price of gold, even at so-called wholesale. And so as a practical matter, when you try to clamp down on the trade in these materials, getting back to the ivory, a lot of people have old ivory, you know, cameos that might have been passed down, you know, those little brown and white things that hang pendants that might be old. And so is trade in those banned? I mean, how do you distinguish between new ivory and ivory that was might have been carved 100 years ago?
Well, in fact, that's the very challenge that led us to announce these actions is the great difficulty that we have in differentiating old from new. And as Ed could describe, some of the cases that we've worked, in fact, involve people who were disguising ivory to look like old or antique ivory to smuggle it into the country and then to sell it on the market here. But that said, we will look for ways to accommodate particular activities that we don't think pose a threat to elephants. And the Endangered Species Act explicitly allows for the sale of antique items. And in the actions we've taken already, we have accommodated the certain non-commercial movement of ivory, including ivory incorporated into musical instruments, into household moves, and into museum specimens.
Yeah, because I would think that perhaps international musicians might run into trouble here if they are bringing some sort of instrument with ivory in it to the United States when, you know, they're coming to play their instrument. Has that been a problem?
Well, certainly we're working closely with the musical instrument world to ensure that they're in compliance with our requirements. As I said, we have laid out particular requirements that have to be met, but we are allowing the non-commercial movement of musical instruments into and out of the country, along with issuance of a permit for those instruments. And that's really part of an international treaty that has been in place for several decades. So it's not really a new requirement for them.
We're speaking with Ed Grace. He's the Deputy Assistant Director for Law Enforcement at Fish and Wildlife Service, and Craig Hoover, the Chief of the Wildlife Trade and Conservation Branch. And so this effort has been up and running for some time. What kind of resources is Fish and Wildlife Service devoting to this anti-ivory trade effort?
Well, on the law enforcement side, because of the poaching crisis that is taking place both with elephants in Africa and rhino horns in Africa, this is a priority for the special agents in the law enforcement side of the Fish and Wildlife Service. One good example is Operation Crash, which has been a priority investigation for the Fish and Wildlife Service over the last 3 years, specifically targeting the illegal trade in rhino horns and elephant ivory. And to date, there's been 20 individuals arrested and convicted for illegally dealing in ivory and rhino horn.
And these are part of the same ring as you were talking about earlier, that these are really sort of mafia-like rings nowadays.
Yeah, it's a couple different rings. It shows you how people that used to be involved in other crimes have now moved into wildlife trafficking. One individual we arrested in a buy-bust operation 2 months ago in Las Vegas, he was selling rhino horns to us. He was convicted in the 80s for distributing drugs for Pablo Escobar here in the United States. We had another individual that sold illegal firearms to one of our undercover agents. So people that are involved in other crimes such as drugs and human trafficking and money laundering have now branched out into trafficking in illegal wildlife.
Yeah, it sort of attracts the wrong sort of people, I guess, no matter where you turn. Just a quick question. Is there any safe way of harvesting ivory without harming the animal? Can you, like, take one end of it or something? Is that any possibility to curb the destruction of the wildlife?
No, it's really not possible with elephants. They really need those tusks to go about their day and ensure that they have protection and the tools they need to survive. It can be done to some extent with rhinos because rhino horn is essentially like fingernail. And so you can tranquilize a rhino and take the horn off, but it's constantly growing, and it's a very labor-intensive thing to be routinely tranquilizing animals to take that horn off. It's a practice that is certainly being employed in places like South Africa, although South Africa has lost over 1,000 rhinos last year, a 7,000% increase in poaching over less than a decade. And so even those kinds of practices are not currently enough to protect those animals.
And Craig, I just want to ask you sort of a broader question. We're talking about animals that are basically, their natural habitat is not in the United States. They live elsewhere. How does protecting them differ from protecting animals here in the United States in terms of what you do and how you work?
Well, certainly, because there are species that occur outside of the United States, our ability to manage habitat and to be more actively involved on the ground is more limited. And so much of what we do is providing technical expertise and advice and providing grants to organizations that are working in those countries to protect those animals. But the other key part for us is to focus on is ensuring that we're not contributing to the problem. We are, of course, one of the world's largest wildlife consumers, and we want to make sure that that consumption is not driving exotic or foreign species toward extinction.